anyone that's been through NJP before knows that if you get caught in a lie, they will kick you out of the Navy. Because one of the things that was told to me several times is that integrity is what they're looking for when it comes to NJPs. They want to know that if you do make a mistake, that you are man enough or woman enough to own up to your mistake and move on. And a lot of people in that whole process told me constantly, like, hey, I got in trouble several times and I'm still here.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today, I just wanted to just have an open conversation about something that just kind of been on my mind about myself, really, but I am hoping that some of you guys can relate to this. And what I found is that in my journey, there are so many things that I thought I was alone on, or that it was like just me and no one's ever going to relate to this. I don't know how many of you guys are millennials and you follow like the nostalgic Instagram pages or Facebook pages that have been like a huge thing lately. And it's so funny how many of those things I did when I was growing up that I thought was just me, because I felt like my childhood was so different than a quote unquote your average child, because I was homeschooled and because I didn't enter the public school system until I was in eighth grade. And I just felt so different from everyone else. But then now looking back, it's like, oh my gosh, there's so many things that I did that some random person in another state in the US was doing. And all these other people can relate to the same thing. And so, yeah, maybe a few of you guys will relate to this episode today. But just to kind of get into it, I remember growing up and feeling like I was a good person. And whatever your definition of a good person is, for me, I just felt like there were good people and there were bad people in the world. And I genuinely categorized myself as that good person. And I don't know if this is because of my Christian upbringing, that Christianity, the way that I learned it, really made it seem so black and white. Like, you are either a good person and you're going to heaven, or you are a bad person and you're going to hell. And if you're a bad person means that like you're murdering people and you're not repenting and up at the altar. And I'm not going to go off on the tangent about religion and Christianity or my experience with that, I should say. But what I am going to say is that I generally had this very, very black and white way of thinking. And so I remember when I was in, I really don't know. I want to say it was like fifth grade, but I was at this band weekend. I don't even think it was like a weekend thing. I used to play the flute and I would always go to these little like workshops and camps and whatever have you. And so I was at this thing and I think it was like a week long workshop camp sort of deal, but it wasn't like, you know, you travel super far away. It was like a local thing. And I remember that at one of the breaks, there was a bunch of kids that were sticking their hands in the vending machine. And this was back in the day when vending machines didn't have the flap that prevents you from sticking your hand up in there. Yes, those existed at one point. And there was a bunch of kids that were trying to stick their hand up in there. And I went through and I was like, oh, I'm going to do it too, because everyone else is. And it was just kind of like a, you know, join the crowd kind of thing. And so it just so happened that I was not a criminal by nature. So obviously I'm not thinking, oh, I'm going to get caught because I'm doing something wrong. But the teacher comes up and is like, oh, Rachel, like this is the, I don't even remember what she said. I just remember like sinking and thinking, oh my God, I'm a bad person now. And like internalizing that so much. And obviously I'm 31 years old and I still have that memory in my head. It's crazy. I was so young then. But the second time that I can distinctly remember was actually when I was in A school. And I've talked about this before, but I don't know if I think I've gone in depth. I honestly don't remember everything that I've talked about in every episode. There's been so many, but just as a refresher, when I was in A school in Pensacola, I got NJP'd. NJP, for those of you who don't know, stands for non-judicial punishment. And You know, I think for all those years of my life, I still had this complex of I'm a good person. I'm a good person. Like I can do no wrong. If I do something wrong, I just repent or say I'm sorry. And like things are good. Like bad people do bad things all the time. Good people make mistakes every once in a while. Like this is just my thought process in my brain. And I think how I've been wired for a really, really long time. And so when I went to NJP, like the whole process for me, I was like a ball of anxiety just as it was because NJP going all the way up to captain's mast at least means that I could have gotten kicked out of the Navy. And keep in mind at this time, I'd only been in the Navy for like a solid 8 months, something like that. So I hadn't even been that long in general that I had been active duty. I hadn't even gone up to the fleet yet. And so the circumstances of the situation, for those of you who don't know or want all the tea and the details of it, I had gone out to this, what was it called? Pensacola has a lot of festivals. And so this was a festival that was out in town. There was alcohol there. I think it was just like a beer tent. I don't think it was anything like super crazy, like a full-on bar by any means. But I was 22, I want to say at the time. So just like barely over the legal age to drink. And I was hanging out with these two Marines who were both underage. And when we had gone to this beer festival thing, we were all drinking. And yeah, I bought alcohol for two people that were under the age of 21, which I knew better, obviously. But I was like, you know, we're out in town. People do this all the time. Like this was such a thing in Pensacola. Like people drinking underage was like rampant there. It was just don't get caught was the thing, right? And so that's why a lot of people went out in town to do their shenanigans, because you don't get caught usually when you're out in town. Where we fucked up is before we went back to the base, we stopped at a liquor store and got a fifth of Jim Beam Apple. I will never forget this. We got a fifth of Jim Beam Apple and we got some Coca-Cola bottles to mix the Jim Beam in with. And so we're in this cab headed back to base and like mixing everything up really quick so that when we get to base, no one's going to know because we just have Coke bottles, right? We don't have, you know, open alcohol that's being carried around. And so what's crazy, and I don't know if I fully know this whole story. This is just what I heard, because when I got back to base and we went to the club on base, which is called Portside in Pensacola, we went, all three of us went there and we just kind of went our separate ways. So I had my Coke bottle. Homeboy had his Coke bottle. I think there's only two. I think the other guy wasn't really partaking. I don't remember. But I remember someone came up to me and they're like, oh, you have to finish that because, you know, they know. And I think maybe it was like you weren't supposed to bring outside stuff. I don't know. Long time ago. But like I was good. No one caught me. And my other friend was good. No one caught him. And then a few days later, I hear, oh, so-and-so got caught. And I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about? So-and-so snitched on you. What? And so, you know, I'm kind of hearing a lot of this stuff from like the third party perspective of what happened. And it, none of it really added up, but I ended up getting pulled into like these higher ups offices. And they asked me like, hey, this happened. This went down. They ratted on you, essentially, is what they told me. They're like, they said that you bought the alcohol and you provided this. And they're like, well, here's the thing, because they're Marines and because you're Navy, we can't take them through our non-judicial punishment process. They have their own, but we still need your side of the story. And really all we can corroborate with is your side of the story. So I'm like, okay, cool. Now, and it's not like I'm in this situation like, oh, okay, cool. Like, yeah, everything's good to go. I'm going to get out of this. I'm freaking out because I'm like, what the hell? Like, and I don't know what happened. You know, I didn't see anything because I think at one point someone told me there was camera footage and I'm like, okay, well, you can't dispute camera footage. The only part of the story that I could control was what happened not on base, because once you're on base, like who knows? Like I'm like, I didn't know jack shit about the military. I didn't know what kind of surveillance they had. I didn't know who saw what. And I was not about to argue with anything that happened on base, because anyone that's been through NJP before knows that if you get caught in a lie, they will kick you out of the Navy. Because one of the things that was told to me several times is that integrity is what they're looking for when it comes to NJPs. They want to know that if you do make a mistake, that you are man enough or woman enough to own up to your mistake and move on. And a lot of people in that whole process told me constantly like, hey, I got in trouble several times and I'm still here. I, you know, had 5 NJPs and I'm still here. Like, I heard so many stories. I didn't hear these stories till later on. I'll kind of take you through the process here, because now we're in like full on tea story time. But the first little bit was just like, I walked in the schoolhouse and they're like, hey, we heard this. This is what happened. You know, they have footage, so-and-so ratted, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay. So then I'm trying to like find people and ask like, what the hell happened? Because I didn't get caught or get in trouble. I guess what had happened was because he had a Coca-Cola bottle and Portside sold Pepsi, not Coke. Someone asked him to open the bottle so that they could sniff it. And then he did. And they found out that there was alcohol in there and he was underage. And so then, you know, they got the rest of the story from him. And later on, I'd been told from higher ups, like, no, he definitely ratted on you. But it is what it is. You know, I don't hold animosity towards that because I shouldn't have done what I did anyway. And I'll own up to that all day. But so anyway, I go back to my barracks, because my barracks, like in a school, there's different forms of leadership. There is the schoolhouse leadership, but then when we stay in the barracks, they don't just let us all run crazy. There's a whole chain of command that's in the barracks too. And so the barracks I lived in was Delta. It was all female. And we had this MTI, military training instructor, who was the person that led the barracks. And she was this AO1 who was very tough, and she was not the nicest person. I had a lot of respect for her up until I didn't. And a lot had to do with me getting in trouble. But I went up to one of the cool MTIs. I don't remember his name. I remember what he looks like, but I don't remember his name. I went up to him and I told him what happened, because they hadn't found out yet, or at least I didn't know whether they found out or not. But anything that I had been told when I was there is, if you get in trouble, tell us as soon as you know, because if we find out first, it's going to be a lot worse for you. So I went to them and I said, hey, listen, I fucked up. I bought alcohol for someone underage. I just want to let you know before you guys find out from someone else. They said, okay, thank you for letting us know. Went back to my room. And the hardest part, I think, about getting in trouble in any situation is like waiting for like the next step, especially when it's something new altogether and you don't know. And it's like, well, what the hell is going to happen now? And no one really explains this process. Like, I had seen a captain's mast when I was in boot camp, because some guy took the swimming stamp for the swimming qual and had stamped his card when he didn't pass. And that was like a huge open captain's mast. And like, it was crazy. Like, there were so many, they brought all of RTC out there to watch this guy just get his ass handed to him. And I can't remember if he got kicked out or not, but yeah, because I didn't even know what was happening when we went to that. But anyway, that's really all I knew about captain's mast. I didn't know about the whole process of NJP, what happens next, nothing. So the next thing I know, I'm getting called into the office with all the MTIs. And there is like, we're in like a closet. Like, I don't even know the square footage of this room, but we are in a closet. Okay. And it is like the tiniest room in the world, with like 10 MTIs and like all the staff that worked in my barracks crowded in there. And they tell me to come in and they tell me to, you know, have a seat. And then they just start like berating me, like, what the hell, what happened? And I told them what happened. And it wasn't like I wasn't used to being yelled at. I'd been yelled at before. Yelling didn't bother me. What bothered me was the idea that I might get kicked out. And then we go back to this idea that I felt like I was a bad person. And I'm like, I don't do this all the time, because they kept telling me like, oh, you did this. Now you do this all the time. Like, this isn't the first time you've bought alcohol for a minor. This is something you do all the time. And I'm like, no. Like, I know, I've known people in my past who have drank their entire time throughout high school and who drank underage and bought alcohol for people underage. Like, that's not me. I kept my head on straight the entire time I was in high school. I think I only drank like maybe 2 times ever. I just wasn't that kind of a person. And so it really bothered me that they were sitting there and like saying, no, this is what you do. You're lying. And they're like, why would you do this? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I just didn't have an answer for them. And they're like, no, why? We need an answer. Why? And I'm like, I don't have an answer for you. I genuinely don't. And that really bothered them for some reason. And so the most awkward part of that interaction is when I went to leave the room, the doorknob fell off the door and it was like really silent. Everyone's pissed off. And I just have to like sit there and awkwardly like pick the doorknob back up, put it on the door and then leave. And then, you know, we're back to anticipation. And what's crazy is for the most part during this process, like everything else is moving on like life as usual. It's not like people are like, oh, you need to go to a separate area. We're going to move on to this right away. Like, it's kind of a little bit of a drawn out process. And I don't remember exact timelines. In my head, it felt like years. It wasn't that long, but I think it was probably a solid month from the time I got in trouble to the time that my captain's mast happened. But I did have to go talk to legal. I was working heavily with the schoolhouse. I didn't really, the MTIs at the barracks really aren't super involved. I just lost my position as yeoman at my barracks, which whatever, I just had to stay on regular watches, which was fine. I just chose yeoman because it was an easier watch schedule. But yeah, I had to go to legal and talk to legal. And then I had to go to the alcohol substance abuse guy. And he sent me to SARP, which Substance Abuse Rehabilitation Program, I think is what that stands for. I think what bothered me the most about that process is, did I drink excessively when I was in Pensacola? Absolutely. Did it make me an alcoholic? No, I don't think so. I really don't. Because I think for me, I see alcoholism as like a psychological something that people are going through, right? It's like, if you're sad for a period, it doesn't mean that you have chronic depression. It just means that you're going through something. So to backtrack a little bit, yeah, I felt like the guy at SARP was very berating, and I just felt like he was trying to get me to admit to something that wasn't true. He kept asking me questions like, were your parents alcoholics? How many drinks did your mom and dad have? And I'm like, my parents did not drink. Like, and if they did, they didn't do it around me. So, you know, alcohol was really not a thing when I was growing up. The first drink that I had was when I was 15 and I was in Germany and I thought it tasted disgusting. I'm like, I was not that kind of person. But what they did end up sending me to was a like 3-day educational course about alcohol, which I did learn a lot in that course. So it wasn't a complete waste of time. And what's funny is when I ended up later down the line in restriction, all the people that were going to like AA and the courses that like required a lot more, they got to leave all the time. And I was like, damn, I wish I had, you know, had more problem. But, you know, in hindsight, I'm like, what the hell kind of stupid ass thought is that? Like, it really wasn't that bad. So anyway, I went to SARP. They determined that I guess needed some education surrounding alcohol, which they weren't wrong. And then they had sent me to, what was the first one? Oh, DRB. So DRB, for those of you who don't know, I know I've been saying that a lot, but I know like Navy terms and acronyms can get kind of weird, especially when you're crossing branches or if you're a civilian listening. So I like to explain the best I can if I remember. So DRB stands for Disciplinary Review Board, and it's a bunch of chiefs that just sit at a table and they're supposed to be investigating and fact finding. Most people find that DRB often is not like that. But where I got, I guess, the upper hand is that the chiefs in my DRB, or the chief that led my DRB, it was probably her first DRB ever, because they had just like got new chiefs in whatever, I don't, in the mess. I don't know all the terminology for that. But anyway, so she was like, she kept saying like, didn't we just do like a briefing saying to not do this? And I'm like, yes, you did, chief. And she was like, I don't know. She was trying, bless her heart. She was trying to be mean. But I think that for some chiefs in the Navy, it probably comes naturally to be an asshole because they were just an asshole for most of their Navy career. But for some people, it's like a muscle they have to build. And I think the most respect that I have, there was a senior chief that I had known the entire time I was at A school. And when I would have conversations with him when I wasn't in trouble, he was very kind. When I would have conversations with him when I was in trouble, he was stern, but he was never unkind. And then, you know, after, I think he was one of the last people I talked to in the schoolhouse, and I told him like, what I respect the most about you in particular, and I wish I remembered his name, is I said, you know when to turn on and turn off the military, right? I said, not a lot of people know how to do that. And I respect that. And that's kind of what I wanted to emulate as a leader when I went through my path in the Navy. At that time, I didn't know if I wanted to do 20 years or less or whatever, but I knew that I respected the people who didn't hold their leadership on a pedestal. I respected the people who treated you like a human being, but they were stern when they needed to be. And so, you know, after my DRB, I was standing out in the hallway because they quite literally sent me across the hallway for OIC Mast. And I guess some people go to XOI. I never went to XOI. That's just at MAST with the executive officer. I went to MAST with the officer in charge. And it took a while for that MAST to start because they had to gather up all these like high level people and whatever. And so I'm out in the hallway sobbing because I'm like, what the hell? Like, and keep in mind when I was in legal and stuff, I kind of brushed over this part, but I had to write a statement and fill out all this paperwork and this and this and that and blah, 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 blah. I think they also give you the opportunity to request, what's it called? The one that's judicial. It's slipping my mind right now. I'll think of it in a little bit. But anyway, but most people say not to request that because it's admitting guilt or something. I don't know. And realistically, what I went to Cabinet's Mass for was probably a pretty common thing there. But yeah, so I'm out in the hallway sobbing and this, I think it was a chief, maybe a retired chief comes up to me and he's like, hey, he's like, what are you crying for? And I was like, well, I'm just scared that I'm going to get kicked out of the Navy. And he was like, listen, he's like, we all make mistakes. He gave me this, like this pep talk, this spiel. And again, I don't remember all the details of it, but he told me, he's like, go to the bathroom, clean yourself up and come on back out and then we'll get through this. And so I went to the bathroom. I took a few minutes, I cleaned myself up and then I brought my ass back out outside the door. And I think it's just standing there at parade rest waiting to be called in. And when they walk you through, by the way, like how you walk in and what you say and everything, it's like a really quick, like right before you go in, oh, by the way, this is how you're going to walk. You're going to do your about face. You're going to do your whatever, this and that. You're going to say the Sailor's Creed. And like, I flawlessly did everything. When I went into OIC MAST, the difference between DRB and OIC MAST is that OIC MAST, they were very nice. No one was yelling. No one was trying to berate. And they were just, you know, having a conversation. And I appreciated that. And after OIC MAST, I was like, oh, maybe it'll just end here because they're all very nice. Wrong. They still sent me to Captain's MAST. And so Captain's MAST is the end of the line for a lot of people. You know, it's not like it can turn into something that is very like tense and hostile depending on answers and who's there and how it goes. But for Captain's MAST, what they do is they have the CO at the front of the room. They have the sailor walk in. And normally when you are standing at attention or anything like that, you have your hands balled up into fists. But for Captain's MAST, they instruct you very explicitly to keep your hands open, like your palms facing yourself inward, because I don't know, punching or hostility or something. I don't know. I don't remember the exact reasons behind it, but it felt very awkward. But then there is like people on the side of the room that the commanding officer will ask about your character and they're essentially character witnesses. And I want to say that like angry MTI said some like, yeah, I don't want her in my Navy, this and this and that. I don't think she wanted anyone in her Navy, honestly, because she was just angry. I don't know why. But it is what it is. But and again, I don't remember all the little details of what was said. I don't remember anyone saying specifically that I was a bad person or that I was a crappy student. I think my instructor said that I was a good student. I showed up promptly on time. I did my work. I was not like a problem child, for lack of better verbiage there. But so the CO made a decision and he had awarded me, yes, they use the word award, 30 days restriction. And restriction is like, it's like the Navy form of jail, but you're just in a barracks, I guess. And I'll explain restriction more in a little bit. But he awarded me 30 days of restriction and then he awarded me half month's pay times one. It might have been two. I think it was just times one, which doesn't actually hit, by the way, until after the 30 days. So that was fun when I was PCSing from Florida to Washington State with half month's pay. Yeah, good times. And then the other thing was a suspended bust. So I was an E2, but the process from E2 to E3 was just like a 9-month wait. So I was almost an E3. And so essentially what a suspended bust is it means that if I get in trouble, then I get busted down to an E1. If I don't get in trouble, then all is well and things just move on, business as usual. And I just, you know, nothing really happens to me. It just gives me like a second chance. to not get busted down another rank. And so I really appreciated that. The hardest part of the whole thing was restriction. It's like right after captain's mast, I have to go straight to my barracks. No, I don't even think it was that. It was not. So I was in my dress whites for my captain's mast, and you actually had to pack my entire sea bag and check out of my barracks room before captain's mast and then bring my sea bag, which is great when you're hiking like a mile across the base in Florida and dress whites and have to not get them wrinkled because there's an inspection right before captain's mast. That was great. And then sweating your ass off too, because it's so hot outside and dress whites are long sleeve. But anyway, so my whole sea bag is already packed. And so after captain's mast, I went straight to the restriction barracks. Didn't get to say hi to anyone, nothing like that. And so the restriction barracks was a different barracks and I was in, it was two buildings over, and I spent 30 days there. So went straight there, and restriction was packed because a bunch of people had just gotten in trouble for a barracks party. So there was like 40 people in restriction at the time. I had two roommates. Both of them had gone to captain's mast the same day as me, something alcohol related for both of them. And in restriction, we checked in, we had to turn our cell phones in, couldn't have our phone the entire time we were there other than like Sundays for like an hour, I want to say. And when I tell you that restriction was dramatic, like there was always something happening in there. It was crazy. When I first checked in, you have to do like a uniform inspection of every single uniform. So dress blues, dress whites, NSUs, probably NWs too. I don't know. I don't remember. But that's that. The only clothes that you can have are anything that's in your sea bag. So sea bag comes with skivvies, underwear. They're granny panties, for those of you who don't know. The boot camp bras, which they're not the worst bras in the world. It's basically boot camp attire, which whatever. Like I just left boot camp. I could do that for another 30 days. I just did it for 8 weeks. The difference is during restriction, our doors to our rooms always had to be open except for nighttime. And I can't remember if we could close them at nighttime or if they still had to be cracked at nighttime, but the doors were always open. Really, the only thing that there was to do was to read, doodle, hang out. After the first week there, we were allowed to go do working parties, which was really helpful. So working parties would just be like cleaning, and Echo Barracks, which was right next to us. It's where a lot of the staff stayed, and any other random working parties. We would also get time to PT in the evenings. So we would walk out to the gym, and a lot of times we were outside. So like I would just go off with whatever friend or just hang out or not work out just to like get a break from the mundane life that was restriction until people got in trouble. Then we couldn't PT anymore. We did leave to go eat at the galley until we got in trouble again. I say we, it wasn't me, but everyone collectively got in trouble if someone fucked up. So that's that. But we ate a lot of, we called them bag nasties. And it was like a sack lunch that had a sandwich in it, like a ham and cheese sandwich, some Famous Amos cookies, which I gained some weight in restriction because we had so many like leftover bags of cookies that I ate just nonstop. And yeah, so ate a lot of bag nasties every morning for breakfast there for a while. We were just eating in the hallway because we weren't actually allowed to leave to go eat. We would just send like two people to go pick up the food from the galley, bring it back to restriction, which was on the third floor of the barracks. And that's what we would do. So for 30 days, it was just like hang out in this barracks. If I saw friends, I could like maybe wave at them. But it was just hanging out with the same group of people the entire time. We had a staff member in restriction with us, which was unheard of. But usually if staff got in trouble, they would have their own restriction. I guess he chose to come to the restriction with all of the students. And the staff member was like sneaking in alcohol and stuff. And so when I say like people got in trouble, like this was just one of the things, right? He was like sneaking in alcohol. It spilled on the floor in one of like the common rooms, which was a privileged room to be in, by the way. People would do puzzles or like card games in the allotted times in that room. And I kept this attitude throughout my entire time in the Navy of like, I already have one ARI or alcohol related incident on my record. If I get another one, I'm kicked out. So anytime anyone had alcohol, if I did not know them and I did not trust them, which was basically everyone I met in the Navy, I did not associate with them because I was not going to take that chance. And realistically, I think that getting in trouble early on was a huge benefit to me because who knows how I would have lived my life or carried myself had I not gotten in trouble, because all I saw was people around me like pushing the limits and not getting in trouble. And then every once in a while, there's a person that got in trouble, but it didn't seem like the norm. And so I probably would have carried myself a lot differently had I not gotten in trouble very early on. And so I am grateful for that, as that like slap in the face that I needed very early on in my career to remind me that me being in the military was a privilege that not everyone gets. As crazy as it sounds to use that verbiage with most of the other stories that I've had surrounding my military experience, right? But it shaped a lot of who I am. So a few other stories, there was this Marine that was in restriction with us who had a lot of issues. I don't know exactly what, but there were hygiene issues, and there was just like, there was always something. Like, I don't even honestly remember what it was, but I remember there was one day that he was complaining about someone stole his cell phone, because all our phones would be in like the RMI's office restriction military instructor, probably. I don't know. But you know, if we walk past that office, which was the first room when you walk down the hallway for restriction, that's, you could see all the cell phones there. And so he was throwing a fit one day, and he was like, I don't know where my cell phone is. Someone stole it. And so the RMIs were like, okay, well, let's do a room sweep. Let's find them. And so they start going through the rooms. What do they call it? I don't remember, like a health and safety or hygiene or something inspection, but they start going through all the rooms, and I kid you not, they're tearing ceiling tiles. They're going through everyone's like drawers. They're tearing everything out looking for this, because there's only so many places this cell phone could be without leaving the building. So they find marijuana. They find cigarettes. They find energy drink cans like in the ceiling tiles, hidden in the random places. And then they start wanding us down to check for metal, like metal detection. And homeboy has his cell phone in the like the blouse part of the bottom of his pants. And so they were like, all right, that's it. Like, we're getting this guy the fuck out of here. And so they had him escorted to the Marine barracks, where they had to have him in the middle of the quarter deck on a suicide watch, because he was like trying to fling himself from the top of the balcony. And, you know, I didn't know then what I know now. I think a lot of people that were in restriction were already going through it and going through a lot in their life, because there's this like majorly stressful time period. I didn't know anything really about them. I didn't really talk to people like that and cultivate these deep relationships with people. A lot of them were actually doing restriction and then getting kicked out of the Navy. Yes, they do that. And the ones that were getting kicked out of the Navy, I know one guy, he went back to California, and they get you a bus ticket. They do not fly you. Imagine taking a bus from Florida to California. Like, no, thank you. I'd rather pay for my own plane ticket. And so, yeah, they found all kinds of things. And that's one of the instances where we got in trouble. And yeah, it was such a crazy, such a crazy time period. I spent a lot of time because I had issues with my knees when I was in Pensacola from the long runs that we did, spent a lot of time in physical therapy, and the guys in physical therapy, the corpsmen there, they were so nice to let me hang out there for as long as I wanted to within reason, just so that I didn't have to go back to restriction. And, you know, my actual physical therapy workout was probably only maybe like half an hour, maybe an hour, but they'd be like, yeah, if you want to hang out for a little longer, just chill on the bike and, you know, just talk or something. Those are the people that probably made the biggest differences in my life. And these people that still stick out in my mind, I went to boot camp in 2015 and I was in Pensacola in 2015. And the people that were kind to me, I still remember them. I might not remember their faces. I might not remember their names, but I remember the impact they had on my life. And so when I talk about this concept of like, be kind to people, there's so much more to it, because that's going to stick. Your kindness, especially when someone is at the lowest of their low, will stick with someone for the rest of their life, and it'll make a difference in their life. I can't stress that enough. And so, you know, I was only in the restriction for the 30 days. Some people did 60 days. They were actually handing out higher punishments for a lot less by the time I got out, because people were filtering in, you know, for whatever they got in trouble for. We'd get new people every other week or something. It wasn't like it was that bad, but you know, anytime they did a captain's mask, someone new would come in and welcome to restriction. We sit here and stare at walls all day. But no, it wasn't really as bad as I thought it would be. It was actually kind of a bit of a refresher, because any time in my life that I've had like a solid break from technology, i.e. boot camp restriction, it's very refreshing because it reminds me about human connection and it forces me to find other ways to deeply connect with people, because it's not the same over a cell phone or, you know, whatever else. It's a lot easier when everyone else also doesn't have technology. I'll say that, because when I was in Misawa on my first like mini detachment, I didn't have cell phone service, but everyone else did. So I was just kind of like the oddball person trying to find things to do while everyone else was like playing video games or on their phones. But social media detoxes, cell phone detoxes, technology detoxes, I'm literally about to do one here soon for a couple days just to like reset myself. And I think it's so important. And so I'm getting off on a little bit of a tangent here, but you know, when I first went to restriction and got in trouble and went through NJP and Captain's Mast, I was like, man, I am a bad person. Like, I didn't think I was a bad person. Throughout that process of the 30 days that I was in restriction, and I had a lot of time to reflect and think about my decisions and the second chance that I got to make something of myself in the military, I was like, you know, I want to start off on the right foot when I go to my next command. And so when I went to Whidbey Island, I spent so much time focused on just bettering myself. I was in the gym constantly. If I wasn't in the gym, I was just in my room playing like a video game. And I'm not a huge gamer, but playing a video game, watching a movie, something. I went out every once in a while with friends, but you know, Whidbey Island and Pensacola are two different worlds, first of all. So you can't even compare the two. But I just knew that I didn't want to be that kind of person that was a partier who was getting in trouble for stupid shit and losing an incredible opportunity over something that was just a bad decision. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there were still people that saw NJP on my record and they were like, oh, well, you're that kind of person, because it did continue to affect me. When I got to my first command, I didn't get the opportunity to go to a crane school in Indiana because I had an NJP on my record and they didn't want me being that person getting in trouble. When I put in for an officer package through the MESIT program, which is the nurse corps in the Navy, the fact that I had an NJP on my record was like a sting on my record. And so I think had I ended up deciding to stay in the military for 20 years, it would have been a little harder for me every time because of the NJP, no matter what. Because it's always there. Does that mean it's impossible? Absolutely not. I met some very high-ranking leaders in the military who had several NJPs, different time. But still, it doesn't mean that it was impossible for me to get to where I wanted to go. I just chose a different path and a different direction. And ultimately, I'm happy that I decided to no longer stay in the military, which, you know, every journey of life comes with its own set of challenges. So if you're a veteran or you're going to be a veteran soon and you're listening to this, know that just because you're getting out of the military doesn't mean that all of a sudden life is like unicorns and rainbows and it's like, oh, I'm free, you know, life is great. You know, you're always going to have your challenges, and the challenges honestly are what make us feel alive, because it's the joy in the process. And I think if I can reflect on my life journeys and all these times where like life has slapped me in the face and said, Rachel, are you a good person? Or are you a bad person? I now know that it's not that black and white. It's not just that we're good people or bad people, that we need these experiences in our life that have us questioning our own moral integrity and have us questioning if we're living in our values, because those are the wake-up calls that we need sometimes to redirect our path. And that's okay. They're necessary. If we just lived our life in this like bubble where nothing bad ever happened or no wake-up calls ever happened, then life would be pretty boring. Like I said, I don't know where I'd be today had I not had my NJP, or, you know, maybe even that experience when I was a kid with the vending machine. I don't know. I truly, truly believe that everything in my life does happen for me, even though it might not feel like it at a lot of times. And I've done an episode about that specific topic before after I attended the Tony Robbins UPW a few years back, but I'm such a huge, huge believer in that. Everything in life happens for me. Everything in life happens for me. And looking at every situation of, okay, how is this working in my favor? It's not always as easy as just a simple thought. Sometimes it's a few months or days later in reflection, but reflection is very important. So that's basically is today's episode. I just kind of wanted to do a little bit of a story time and relating it back to some personal feelings. And like I said, maybe some of you can relate, maybe some of you can't. If you didn't know my whole NJP story, now you do. I probably missed a few details. So if you went to A school with me and you're like, no, sorry, my memory is not that great sometimes, but that's how I remember it the best in this moment. So I did want to let you guys know that my apparel dropped on my website. So ysdeh.com, go grab you a hoodie, go grab you a beanie. Let me know if you have any issues with that because I just slapped it up a few days ago and it's all very new, but I'm really excited about that. And to finally have an option for people to rep the brand. Your story doesn't end here. And yeah, just super excited for things to come and ramping up for some incredible episodes upcoming. Also, the YouTube channel, although I have not been the greatest with consistently uploading on it, it is still there. So if you have not subscribed to the YouTube channel underscore YSDEH, please do that. My goal is to hit 1,000 subscribers. As of today, which is March 26th, when I'm recording this episode, we are at 40. So we're doing great growing, but share with your friends, share with your family, share with people in the random Facebook groups that you're in, because you never know who might need to hear these messages. Thank you guys. See you next week.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.